Welcome to this episode of Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess. I'm Eric.
And I'm Angie.
We are married with a ton of kids.
We have 6 kids total. He has 3 and I have 3.
My name's Hallie and I love riding horses.
I'm Lexi and I love agriculture.
My name's Carter and I love eating.
My name's Chase and I love lifting weights.
My name's Summer and I love spending my parents' money.
I'm Dane and I love baseball.
Our show is about our blended, blessed, and always a mess life. And our hope is if you find yourself in the same situation we are in, that by sharing our story, all the fun and all the mess, the challenges we are experiencing, it will give you some inspirations, laughs, and community, knowing you are not alone in this mess.
We appreciate you spending time with us. Let's dive in.
Welcome to this week's episode of Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess. And we haven't had a guest in a while, have we?
No, it's time.
It is time to have a guest and kind of detract a little bit from the last 8-9 weeks of our life. But I will say that kind of what spawned this is with everything that's been going on with losing Hallie and how difficult that has been, it's hard to get up. I mean, that may be the easiest thing to say. Every morning, it's a chore. It's a challenge to get out of bed. You feel that more than any of us. But you get up and you try to find a why, and you try to figure out a reason to keep moving forward. And that kind of brought on today's guest. And in that, it's because I was having this exact conversation with Michael Agnew. And if you've never heard of Michael, because a lot of people listen from across the United States, he's become a friend of mine over the last 13-14 months, and he's my personal trainer. He owns a gym here in town, but he is a former Mizzou All-American. He played in the NFL for several years, and now him and his friend Jarell are back here in Columbia with a gym called API Project Fitness that our family loves. Our kids go there, and they train personally with trainers that he has to get better in sports for junior high and high school, and we just all absolutely love it. My conversations with Michael always end up incredibly deep while I'm in the gym. I don't know how that happens, but they do. And so, you know, the last 8-9 weeks, it's been therapeutic. There have been days I've showed up at the gym and I'm just pissed off. I'm just angry about the situation that we're in. And so Michael helps me get a good pump on, right? And kind of work through that. But we always end up having a conversation. And I learn something new about you all the time. You know what I learned new about you today? Your degree. What is your degree in?
Well, I have a business degree, but I also have a master's degree in psychology and counseling.
Yeah, and I had no idea, but it makes so much more sense, the conversations that we have all the time after you said that to me today. And so we talked about several weeks ago, people have to find a why and a meaning. And that kind of brought on, I was telling Angie, I was like, I just think this would be good. We should have Michael on the podcast. And she thought that too. So we will talk about the why and things like that. But what Angie and I first want to talk about is life is hard. And so many times people cave to that and they really struggle when life is hard. As I've gotten to know you, you have honestly, and you've lived one of the harder lives of anybody that I've known. You are a success story in how you have taken that and turned it into something really positive. So can you just talk to us a little bit about how you grew up, first of all, and then we'll kind of talk about how you got to be successful and the mindset. What we really want to know is how people that are listening, whether they're in a blended family, whether they're going through a significant loss like we are, they work on their mindset to go places. But let's start by telling people where you came from.
All right. Well, let me preface it by saying, first of all, thanks for letting me in here and put me on the podcast and the whole deal. And I also say that I don't know if my life was been that hard, right? And you'll understand why I say that, because that's how I view the world. So first of all, where I'm from, a little town called Plainview, Texas, that's where I was raised. But that's not where I was born. I was born actually in Dallas, Texas, and I was immediately put into the foster care system. The reason why is my mom, and it's funny because I'm now old enough, mature enough, these things are easy for me to say and let people know. My mom was a drug addict and a prostitute. She doesn't even know who my father is. Now, through a series of, you know, DNA testing and ancestry, I have found him and I have not communicated with him for various reasons, but it's just an interesting thing. And so I could go on forever about the foster care system, right? Because you say, okay, like this is a hard upbringing and all that. I think I actually probably got the better end of the deal. But in America, the foster care system is poor. It's bad. Well, like half of it's good, really good, and half of it's really bad. What happens is parents get money for how many kids they foster. And it's usually like $1,000, $1,200, depending on what state and different things per kid you get each month. And so a lot of times these families will foster kids only for the, you know, the $1,000 or whatever it is each month. So they might have four or five kids and they're collecting, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 each month, and that's their income. And you can understand where that might go bad, right? I mean, it does go bad. And a couple of my brothers, we're all from, we all have different birth parents, my brothers and sisters that were adopted. But a couple of my brothers were brought up in these bad homes, like just abuse and physical, mental, sexual abuse, all these things, these foster homes. And so my parents that adopted me later, what happened is they had my brother, Tony, who was in the foster care system, and they fostered him. And the state came in and took him from them because this social worker said, okay, we need to put him with a family that's, you know, Black. They wanted him to grow up in a culture. My adopted parents are white. They said, oh, we need to take him and put him in a culture that he's, you know, that's like his skin color. And it ended up being a bad situation, abuse, all this. And so my parents said, you know, enough of the fostering. And they just started adopting kids. And so I was one of those kids. I was almost 5 years old when I was adopted after having bounced around from different foster homes. And it ended up being 9 kids. And when you adopt a kid, that's your kid. There's no more state funds. You're now responsible for them. But anyway, long story short, my parents ended up buying a horse ranch. And by horse, this is not like your huge horse ranch with multiple stables. Okay, this is like dirt farm, right? Small barn, multiple horses. We're boarding these horses. You know, we have all these horses here. And we learn hard work. We wake up every morning. We work on the farm. And then we go to school. And then we come back and we work, right? So that's kind of the mindset that we have.
I've told you our daughter Hallie rode horses. She broke horses. That's you breaking horses at a young age.
Yeah, and we did it. And we did it for it was almost like a secondary kind of income for us to help pay for all those kids, and it was also work and help taught us all these lessons. So it was a big deal. But anyway, there was 9 of us. My parents adopted 9 of us, and you can imagine the different. They said, okay, I don't care what they look like. I don't care their skin color, age, nothing. Who are the kids that need it? You know, and that's what they did. They adopted us and. Saints, incredible people my adopted parents are, which, you know, if it had not been for them, oh my gosh, I could have been anywhere, right? But fortunately for me, they taught me the secret to life. And I can tell you that secret if you want to hear it. You
want to hear that? We want to hear it. Yeah,
I do. All right, here and all the listeners, everyone that's listening, I'm about to drop a bombshell on you. Okay?
I can't wait.
Here's the secret to life. The secret to life is that there is no secret, right? Work hard and obey the Lord. That's it. That's not a secret. We all know that, right? But we have trouble walking that path. But that's it. We're always looking for some secret. There's no secret. That's it. Follow those two things. You're going to be all right. But anyway, yeah. So I ended up playing high school football, going on to college. I did pretty well there. University of Missouri. Go
now,
Tigers.
Let's talk about this. So all your brothers and sisters are diverse because, you know, there's 9 of them all adopted different parents. You have a twin sister.
I do have a twin sister who's biological for sure.
Yeah. And so you have that. But then, you know, you were what, 6'5", 6'6"?
I was 6'6". I was the biggest one by far.
And then your adopted parents are what, 5'9"?
Yeah. My dad is like 5'8", 5'9". I guess he's 5'9". My mom is just a little bit shorter than him.
Yeah, so here you are, like, sitting out, like, I'm going to dunk a basketball in the 8th grade, and I'm going to play high school football.
I'm curious, too, like, what the town you grew up in was like. Was it a diverse town, too, or?
Well, no, like, you'd be surprised. I'm from West Texas. It's, like, 60% Hispanic.
Okay.
You know, so it's not like there's this. It's Hispanic and then it's white. That's kind of what the town is made up of. But I will tell you, there was like questioning looks when you looked at our family. Like, oh, what is this family? You
know? Right, right.
Which you guys understand.
Yeah,
you understand,
absolutely.
You know?
So. Yeah. So where were you in the lineup with all the women?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest of 9.
For sure. I'm probably the youngest, but I'm the tallest, best looking.
But
I was the youngest for sure. Which is interesting because there's so many lessons to learn from your older brothers and sisters. So that's where I learned a lot of life lessons.
So do you remember, like, growing up, maybe certain times that were super challenging? And then how'd you navigate that? Because to your point earlier, Eric, like, anytime you're faced with challenges, I feel like it could go 2 different directions, right? We talk about that often, like, even just blended families. Like, you always have a choice. And you can either turn something into positive or turn something into, you know, make negative choices. So it's like, how do you even teach that mindset to kids to turn such a challenging situation into something positive? So I don't know if you you know, remember the growing up? Because I'm sure that had to be, there had to be challenges, right?
Oh, there's huge challenges. And I didn't preface it very well. We were poor. We were real poor. My parents didn't make a lot. My dad did like heating and air, you know, and so, and I didn't know that we were poor. So,
right.
You once said to me, we got one present on Christmas and we thought it was the coolest thing ever because we didn't know we were poor.
Yeah. We all would get like one present and maybe like a group. And we didn't know. We thought it was cool. It was, you know, you have a present on Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the challenges though were not that, by the way. My parents were really good people. They were never the challenge. I think the challenges for me was, you know, I was super tall, lanky. I didn't fit in because I was just, you know, high water pants. You know, we didn't have money
right.
for custom length pants. You know, I was like a 38 length pants. You know what I mean? But I had like a 28 waist, whatever it
right,
was.
So
I think that's partially the challenge. The other challenge, though, is being from a family that has multiple backgrounds of these kids. Like my brother Tony, I was telling you about, he's in jail now. He was always in and out of trouble. I mean, you know, I love him and I at least love the idea that he was a decent brother to me, but just from me to you, he was abusive to my sisters, you know, and it was violence towards his brothers, including myself. And so that's a challenge that you don't know how to deal with as a kid. But here's how, what happened is, and I always say this, you cannot teach your kids how to deal with issues. All you can do is give them the tools and they have to learn how to use them. Right. My parents are really good with that. Number one tool, we went to church twice a week. You know what I mean? So you learn that, you get those tools, and you sharpen that axe. But I actually developed this view on life myself with the aid of my parents, you know, just being good people. I view the world like almost like a hole in the ground. Okay. And everyone's in this hole. Right. And everyone's trying to climb out of this hole. And there's some people that look up and say, it's not fair that he is where he is, or he got that hand up, or that his parents started him off there, or, you know, he had that tool to get where he is, right? And what you're not doing, you're not climbing when you're doing that. The best thing you can do is just keep on climbing. Climb, climb, climb. No matter what, you're going to slip and you're going to fall, and that's okay, but you got to keep clawing, scratching, digging your way up the wall and climb. And it's the craziest thing ever, because one day you're going to look down. And there are going to be people looking up at you saying, it ain't fair. He is where he is. And I believe that. I believe that with everything. And so, but you have to realize, if you don't realize that, you're going to always be saying, it ain't fair that this happened to me, or it's not fair that this person is this way. All you can do is climb or not. But in the end, you're not going to be able to climb. You're going to be too old, too frail, and you're going to look back at your life and you're going to regret what you did, or you're going to love it.
Do you understand now why I lift so much weight when I'm in there? It's very motivational.
Are you sure you're lifting or are you chatting?
it's a combo. It's very motivational. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to get in better shape because all the things we're talking about in there. That's what I'm saying. I love that analogy, though. I've never thought of that. And you've never shared that with me until now. So I do. I really like that a lot, that you're just constantly climbing. And it does feel like that. And especially where we're at in life right now with all the tragedy that we're going through every day, it feels like we've slipped.
You know how I knew you were going to be okay? You know how I knew you guys were going to be okay? You called me up, you texted me and said, hey, I need to come in. I need to work out. You know what that said to me? That said, I'm climbing. I'm digging footholds for myself. I'm digging. I'm clawing. I'm scratching my way up the hill. And I said, you know what? They're going to be okay. You know, it's going to suck for a while, but you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
I knew it.
I do think when you're talking about that, I thought the exact same thing, because I am probably in the best shape I've ever been in right now because of the fight. And I think part of it is the realizing that everybody's going to face challenges, right? And that's the choice. That's your pivot. And the choice that we are all making, even the kids, like I feel like they are, I mean, Chase wrestled the 3 days after that happened.
Digging footholds.
Yeah. I'm fighting through it. Did it suck? Yes. It was brutal for everybody. Painful. But it's that choice. And so I'm always interested in people that make that, you know, keep climbing analogy through life, because it's like, what are they doing that they can share and help other people? Because I think a lot of people don't know. They don't know how to even get started climbing.
You know, there's an old saying, and it's like a Southern saying. I think I heard it from my mom. If the mountain were smooth, how could you climb? It's all the little adversities in life that give you the footholds you need to get to the top. You know, it's huge, man.
He's a philosopher. I'm telling you, the guy's a philosopher.
I don't know.
I love it. So, okay. So you're going through these hardships and your brother, but then you decide, you know, start playing football. And that takes you on another path in life that taught you a lot of lessons. So talk a little bit about your journey through football and then the lessons that playing on a team sport like that and growing into an All-American and an NFL player taught you, because I know it taught you a lot of different things.
Yeah, there's so many lessons you can learn. First of all, I love sports for kids, right? You never expect your kid to be a professional football player, professional baseball, or whatever it is. But there are lessons learned along the way from just learning how to work hard. It's like the biggest life lesson of all is that when you pay the price, right, you'll get what you pay for. Hmm. You know, I believe that. And so, but you do learn that. I was so fortunate, though, because genetically I was already there, man. I was the best player in high school with minimal work. It's true. You know, I tried to work out when I could and all that. I didn't start playing football until like eighth grade because we didn't have money for Little League and all that. But I was genetically there, right? Well, then you get to college. You get to college and everybody's there. Everybody is already genetically good. And so the first 2 years in college, I had like seven catches total, right? I was just this bench warmer.
What happens now? Those guys transfer now. Yeah. That's what happens now.
Which is terrible, right?
Yeah.
Which is so terrible.
Because you didn't transfer, and then what happens?
No. So what – it was another mindset. It was a mindset change for me. I guess that's kind of what pivoted my whole life around. I said, you know what? I have what it takes. I know that I can do it if I put in the right work. And so that's what I did. I mean, I took a whole year. I changed my mindset. No, I'm going to climb. I'm going to freaking fight. That's kind of where I changed my mindset, and I – turned it around that spring, earned the spot, went from like third string to first string in the spring ball that we had at Mizzou. And then the next year, I was All-American. I tell these kids all the time, it's like, oh, I'm second string. I'm a sophomore. I'm second string. I better transfer. What are you doing, man? Why don't you earn the spot? You're going to go transfer to New Mexico State or somewhere, and there's going to be some salty senior sitting there. And he's not going to give up his spot.
Yeah.
You know what? And even if it was easier to start there, it wouldn't be worth it. You know, the best things in life take a great amount of effort to accomplish. If it's easy, it's not even worth it.
Do you think that mindset's trainable in kids? Like, I look at a lot of kids right now with, like, social media and just I feel like their confidence is not there. Yeah. Do you think that's something that you're kind of, like, not born with, but you get through faith? Or do you feel like it's a trainable mindset to have that confidence, like, nope, I'm working hard, I'm working my ass off to get there?
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't train confidence, but you can, like, as a parent, you can give them opportunities. You can push them to the edge so that they jump. You know what I mean? You do that continually and that's how you get, you can't train confidence. You have to earn it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You have to earn it by making the jump. That's it.
But you do that by going to the gym every day.
Yeah.
You do that by trying something new, maybe yep. the next time that you were afraid to do the time before. And that's how the confidence, I think, builds.
Yeah.
Or at least I think it does. So, all right, you make it to college. Now you're an All-American. You get to the NFL. And, you know, you and I have talked about it. Like, you didn't have the career you wanted there. Probably you were the strongest you've ever been and ran into some bad luck when you were about to get picked up by a team you probably could have really taken off with. But that didn't stop you in life. So what was that path like and led you back here to Columbia, Missouri and, you know, the path that you're on now? And I love it because you do. You coach high school football. You own a gym that helps kids get better, old people like me. And then, but it's, you know, what was that mindset like to come full circle and help people in a lot of different ways?
Well, what I'm about to tell you, I didn't even realize until it was over, until I was done with the league. And I gave you the codicil. It was the secret to life, right? You work hard and you obey the Lord. I was working my butt off, but I wasn't following the Lord then. And it wasn't his plan to keep me in the league. You know what he said? That's not for you. So I said, okay. So I went and coached college ball after I got out of the NFL. You know what he said? He said, dude, that ain't for you. And then I was like, okay, so what am I going to do? I love football. So I started coaching at Tolton High School ball. And it was like the best thing ever. You think like, and this is, I was telling Eric this earlier. You think that like happiness has to do with something. I was making so much money in the NFL, doing the, you know, more money I ever made. This whole deal was all this. And I was the most miserable I'd ever been. And it's because I wasn't following the Lord. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? And then I go coach high school football for like pennies. And all of a sudden, it's like the most joy and most fulfillment I've ever had. I get to train people at the gym, which gives me full autonomy of my life. And I get to remain in football and I get to help boys become men. And all of a sudden, God says, that's what you should do. That's what you should do. And it felt right. The whole time I was in the league, it was like struggle, trying to figure out why I'm not starting. I feel like I'm better than that guy, but I'm still here in this position. And that's because you have to work hard, but you also have to follow the Lord. And I don't think I was like necessarily in that mode when I was a player.
That's so damn powerful. That's amazing. So I have so many questions. But I think what you said was you didn't realize it till later. So in that moment, though, it's almost like you have to experience the hard stuff, the hard, like, hey, what's going on, then get to your spot, and then you reflect and go, okay, that's I'm supposed to be here.
I was young, and I was not smart enough yet to understand what was happening to me. It wasn't until I got a little bit older and I realized, okay, this is why this happened. You know, because at the time, guess what you're doing? You're like pointing at the sky saying, why God me? Why, oh God, why? You know what I mean? And you do that and you say, what is, and the problem is he's telling you the whole time.
Yeah,
you know, like, I'm giving you this feeling that this isn't for you, man. And I transferred from the Dolphins. I got cut, or I got traded to the Lions, and I was there for like 3 days. And I got cut from there, and I got played for Jacksonville for a few weeks. And then I went and did a year in Pittsburgh. And it was because I could never get settled, right? I ended up with the Saints, but it was always like, you know, you have this uneasy feeling this whole time. It never felt right.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, too. I was away from my family. I just had a new baby, Alexa, my oldest, who's now 10. Just had her, wasn't with her. I think God was telling me all the time, like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you don't need that flashy, fancy life, right? That's not for you. I don't have that for you. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part, is like trusting the process.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to do that right now. And I do think at some point we'll look back and go, oh, okay, that's how we ended up here. And this is our journey. But that is the hardest thing, is in the midst of all the challenges, when you feel like it should be a certain way, to be able to trust it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You don't have to think about it. All you have to do is climb. That's it. One foot in front of the other. That's why sometimes I say you're going to slip, you're going to fall, but you keep digging footholds. That's why I use the analogy. You got to claw sometimes. You got to scratch. And that's all you can do. Because what else are you going to do? You're going to perform some magic? You're not going to perform some magic. All you can do is work hard. That's it.
Yeah, that's the only thing you can control. I feel like for us, we talk about this all the time, just Eric and I, about like, I think when you face challenges, it's like you realize you're not in control, and that's so hard to release that. And that is the only thing that you can do, is the fight.
Yeah. So something else that we've talked about recently then, because I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, is finding a why, right? Especially when you go through the hardship, and you're talking about climbing out of the hole, and I get that. But you had recently read a book. It really stuck with me because, you know, it was probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, and Hallie had been gone for maybe 4 to 6 weeks at that time. And it's just hard to get up. It's hard to keep climbing. And you started talking to me about this book, and you've got to find a why. Yeah. Everybody's got to find a why. And talk a little bit about that and how people use that to get up and keep moving.
There's probably a couple books, because I love to read, but there's a book that just resonates with me. It's called A Man's Search for Meaning. It's by Viktor Frankl. Okay, he was this Jewish guy who was a psychologist and a doctor during World War II, and he had doctor in front of his name. So the Nazis come, and they're doing their thing, and he ends up going to Auschwitz, and they say, okay, he's a doctor. So they put him in charge of this ward of, like, you know, all the sick Jews and stuff that are in Auschwitz, and his whole goal is to, like, help them. And he's got, obviously, like, no access to medicine and tools and all this, but he's trying to do his best. He's a psychologist, not even a medical doctor, but he's doing his best to help these people. And he's one of the I think it was like 5% of people that went to Auschwitz actually survived it. And the whole book is like him saying, okay, this is my story about how I survived Auschwitz. And then the second half of the book is like, here's the psychological tools that I used, right? And it's so crazy. He's like, dude, the reason why I survived is because I found purpose in me. Everything had been taken from him. His wife had been killed. His children had been killed. Everything had been taken from him. But he like found this purpose and meaning in his life. It was like helping these other people in this camp try to survive. I mean, he's like bandaging wounds with dirt and mud and clay or whatever he can find. You know, he's like doing this, ripping his shirt off for these people. And all of a sudden he starts realizing, okay, I found purpose and meaning. You know, you try to seek, I was telling, I can't remember, maybe it was you. You try to seek happiness, right? But happiness is like, dude, it's so fragile, man. Don't seek happiness. Like, if I were to come here, I'd just give you $1,000 right now. You'd be like, oh, sweet, $1,000. And you'd be happy, right? But then I'd punch you in the face and you would be sad because that's how fragile happiness is, right? Right? It's so fragile. Anybody can take your happiness from you. Any situation, anything can happen to you where now you are no longer happy, right? But nobody can take your purpose and meaning. And if you really drive on purpose and meaning, you're going to eventually, happiness will be a side effect. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But we do that. We try to find like instant gratification. You know, we go and like, oh, if I just have more likes on Instagram, if I just have more followers, if this girl likes me or that guy likes me, you know, I'm going to be happy. And that's not true. You know, if I can make a certain amount of money, that ain't going to make you happy. It's going to be purpose and meaning. I was miserable making the most money I ever made in my life. Miserable. It's crazy. Purpose and meaning. And you got to hammer that home. That's a good book. The other book I was going to tell you about was The How of Happiness. I think the lady, it's a lady that wrote it, and she's really, really good. But she basically gives the same narrative. Her thesis is finding purpose is going to help you find happiness. That'd be a good one. It's like Sanjay or I can't remember her name. But
so, all right. So now you're doing something that you feel the Lord has called you to do with coaching a high school football team, and you own a gym where you can help other kids grow into their bodies and learn about self-confidence and discipline and doing what's best for their bodies. And that's, I guess, when you're doing all those things and you're loving life, how do you then give that to your own kids as a dad? Sure. Like, what is your thought process on being a father? Because we talk about being a dad a lot when we're in the gym together.
Dude, the best lessons that I can teach is just to show them, right? Because you can talk to them all day. You know, you have lots of kids. You know, they're not going to listen to you. But you have to show them how you live. I believe that. Like, they're going to learn from just looking at you. I remember my dad was at work day in, day out, working hard, and he never missed a beat. I don't remember my dad actually ever having, like, an argument with my mom, not in front of us. So I try to replicate him. He's a saint, by the way. So is my mom. But, you know, that I learned the lessons not from what he told me so much as to how he acted and what he did. Hopefully my kids see me working hard, grinding, and then they kind of inherit that. It's also important to give them the right opportunity. You know what I mean? Put them in positions where they can then execute what you've taught them.
So we talk about this a lot, and I have especially been talking to other dads ever since Hallie passed. I know I've talked to you about it already once before, but having daughters at home, I think it's so important for dads to show up for their daughters and to show them how you're supposed to be loved by a man so they don't go seeking that happiness. Like you're talking about you know, if our daughters are seeking happiness in a man, that's going to go poorly.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? And have you, your daughters are still young, but just as you interact with them and you engage with them, I've seen you with all your kids at the gym. I mean, you're a great dad. As they get older, what are your thoughts on showing them about being the strong dad? I mean, I know.
Dude, there's so much literature on that, by the way. I mean, there's stats, crazy stats about daughters that grow up without fathers, right? And sons that grow up without fathers. It's so important. And not to say anything against mothers, but, you know, the stats on fatherhood is huge. It's so huge. And it's kind of what I was saying before, you know, your daughters are going to find men with your character traits, right? How you act is like, you're like their first love. Subconsciously, like you are like the role model they're going to find later in life. Hopefully it's a good one. That's not always true, I don't think. But they're going to, there's the standard that you set is going to be the standard for men. And I want my daughters to think, this guy is nothing. Look at my dad. You know what I mean?
I love it.
And that's, you know, that's a challenge, I think, probably with a blended family and all that. It's a challenge to try and then come in, especially Eric, to come in with daughters that you haven't been there their entire life. And now I have to try and set that. You've got to step up, though. You know, you're on the plate now. I think that's huge. And I'm trying as hard as I can. I show them so much love, my daughters, and I try to set the standard high. I treat my wife like an absolute princess every time I can in front of them, just so that they know how it's supposed to look. But
so true.
No, I think that's so important, right? I want our kids to see that I treat you with the utmost respect and care and love so that the boys know how to do that with a girl. And so that the girls know this is what I should be treated like. And I hope that comes across to our kids.
That's why I'm in the catbird seat.
We've been talking about that. She's in the catbird seat. She didn't know what that was. It means you're up here.
I had to Google it. What that means.
Yeah, I put you up here. You're living a good life because that's where I've got you, sitting in the catbird seat.
It's funny. My best friend and business partner, Jarrell, got married. I said, dude, here's what you do. You have to pick your battles. you have to 100% be ready to lose every one of those battles too. I will let my wife win even when I know she's wrong, just so I don't have to, just so that my daughters see me just doing whatever she, not doing whatever she wants, but being almost abdicating to her will. You know what I mean? Now, don't get me wrong. Like, there are some things that I think that we need to do a certain way and we'll do that way. But there's so many battles you don't have to fight. You know, you want to pick the paint on the walls? Go ahead. You want to pick the sheets on the bed? I don't care about that stuff. You win that battle.
You said something today. I haven't told Angie this, but we were just talking about marriage because there was a female working out. And she was talking about how, you know, they celebrate anniversaries because she's like, it's hard to be married. They've been married for like 13 years. And you started talking about your view on marriage is that you, as a man, look to see what you can do better at yourself rather than how can I change my wife? And you think women should do the same thing. I mean, it's like both parties should look at every day you're waking up because it is hard to be married and blended family we know is hard. And your philosophy is you see things and there's things about your partner. Maybe you do want to change. Maybe you don't, but you don't look at those. You focus on yourself.
Well, I mean, that's all you can do. So you're not going to change her, by the way. There's nothing you can do to change her. So I committed, I married you. So let me figure out how to shape my puzzle piece to fit yours. That's what I think, right? I think, okay, what is it that I'm doing wrong and how can I do it better? And it's funny, we were kind of jokingly saying, you know, she's never wrong. It's okay that she won't admit that she's wrong. That's an okay thing because I know that I'm wrong and I'm willing to admit there's so many different things that I can polish up, you know, and I'll try and shape my puzzle piece of her. Now, should she be thinking the same thing? Yeah, but I can't control that though, so I don't. There's not, you can't go, you can't look at your wife and say, hey, you need to shape up. She's going to say it to you though. She will say it to you. But all I can do is polish mine as much as I can. You know what I mean? Cause I'm committed to that, right? That's the whole point of marriage. That's why it's important.
How many wives listening to this are going to send this podcast to their husbands and be like, you need to listen to this?
Well, I would tell her, and I love you, Allie, if you're out there, I love you to death, but you can shape up too, right? And I'm saying that in this closed podcast room.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, no one's listening. No one's.
But really, though, but you know what? You actually can't tell them that because you can't change them.
Yeah.
You can change yourself and then inspire them to be better for you too. And that's how marriage works. She's, like I said, she said it's hard being married. No, it's not. Not for me. You have to love your wife and you do everything you can to make sure that they're pleased and then vice versa. You know what I mean? That's not a hard thing. Hard to me is like roofing in the summer in July. That's difficult. Saying I love you is easy.
Yeah.
Saying I love you is easy and doing the dishes is easy. You know what I mean?
I love your mindset. I love it.
It's positive all the time. That's why me and the kids like going to the gym because it's a positive gym.
Well, it puts things in perspective, right? Like, I think it depends on like your life experiences and what is hard to you. What's hard to you, someone else may be like, oh my God, I can't even imagine that, right? So I just love the perspective, mindset, and focus on what you can control too. Because to your point, you can't control the other person.
You cannot. You can't. There's no formulation of words that you can make that will change that person. It's not going to happen. You cannot formulate words that will change that person. That what I was the roofing job. I had a basketball tournament I had to go to, and it was like we didn't have money. My parents didn't have money. It was AAU basketball when I was in high school. So I like picked up this summer job, and I was like roofing in West Texas, and it was in the middle of the summer, and I was like getting sunburns on my head. It was like burning my scalp. I remember, and I was like, this is miserable. It was like the worst thing ever. And like, it's not, so my point is looking at it in perspective, it's not hard when your wife says, hey, can you do the dishes? No problem. In fact, it's not hard just to get home and then do them. Right? I see him, I just do them. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's not that hard. We're irrational, so we might make it seem like a big deal. Like, oh, I got to do the dishes again, but it ain't hard. It's not hard. You know what I mean? Really? Have you seen that show, like, what's that show? Like, Ice Road Truckers?
Yes.
These dudes are, like, rolling down this icy road, and they're, like, get breaking down, and it's, like, sub-zero or whatever it is. That's hard.
You know? Not the dishes. That's,
no.
Yeah, that's funny.
So, but really, saying I love you every day is not hard. And you should say that.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to hold you to that. Yeah.
You remind me every day.
I'm kidding. So, all right. We're pretty much out of time. We ask all of our guests the same question. I didn't prep you with this. So if you need a second to think about it, you can have it.
Shoot it.
Do you have a favorite family tradition in your home?
No.
Now, he may have an answer for his no. And because here's a guy, I haven't told you this, I don't think. He doesn't celebrate his birthday.
What?
No, he doesn't.
I celebrate the whole month.
I can give you the whole spiel.
I want to hear it.
All right, you want to hear it? All right.
Yeah.
So let me preface this, right? I celebrate my kids' birthdays and my wife's birthday and all that because it's important to them. I don't celebrate my own birthday because it's not important to me. What did I do to be celebrated? I didn't. Birth happened to me, right? I didn't do anything. If anything, I feel like we should celebrate the moms that had to push us out. And then what we do, here's what we do on our birthdays. Oh, I'm going to have 10 beers. You know, I'm not going to work out. This is my birthday, right? You know, I'm going to have these shots, or I'm going to go out and party and all this. You know what you're doing? You're getting softer on your birthday just because some woman had the bravery and the audacity to like push you out 35 years ago that now I'm going to celebrate and become softer on my birthday.
Now I feel bad.
No, but don't get me wrong. I hold myself to that standard, right? But nobody else. I will celebrate everybody else's birthday. But I feel almost a slight tinge of guilt. One of my friends told me, he said, dude, you're just, you know, you got to live another year. You made it through another year. That's an accomplishment.
It's a level. Another level.
No, I said no. I know idiots that are older than me, right? My own, just remaining alive, you know, that's not a difficult thing, right?
Oh, my God.
You know, or at least it's not something that I should be accredited for. It wasn't through my own effort that I'm here, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, I outlived Jesus. So let's be realistic here, you know? That's not that difficult of a thing.
Oh, my gosh. Ugh. All right. Well, I'm going to ask your wife the next time I see her what her favorite family tradition is.
We only give you a tradition because the question was asked, what's your favorite?
Okay, that's fair. You
what
give us any.
Yeah.
And so a tradition for us, I guess it's kind of funny. We have holiday traditions. I can give you one of those. We have Christmas tradition for us is the kids will decorate the tree and then Allie will undecorate the tree and then decorate it correctly.
Yes.
So that's a thing.
I feel that. Yep.
But that's really kind of the most of the tradition. We're not very, we don't have a lot of traditions, but I guess we have those kind of traditions.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. Well, that is Michael Agnew, one of the co-owners of API Project Fitness here in Columbia. And if you live in Mid-Missouri, I highly recommend that you check it out. And this month, you can get free classes, too. That's not even why he's on here.
Yeah, free classes. Listen, I'm going to be on here for that. Go to the website. Use the promo code FREE. That's just F-R-E, like you spell free. Type it in there. You get a free month.
Yeah, and you can get more inspiration from Michael.
There you go. I'll be there.
I go in there, and I come out inspired. I tell Angie all the time. I just feel better. I went in there a couple days ago, and I was so pissed off when I got there. I mean, we started talking about it right away. I was like, I'm angry. Like, I'm angry today. And we worked hard for an hour, and it did. It really did help when I got out. So absolutely love it. Michael, thank you for sharing your story with all of our listeners. We appreciate it very much, and we'd have you on anytime. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That is this week's episode of Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess. We hope you have a great week, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and at BlendedBlessedAlwaysAMess.com.
Reach out to us on any of our social channels. We would love to hear from you. Have a great week.